My name is Lynn Olson. Today's date is March 10, 1988, and the following is an interview with Professor John Dirks, Professor of Art at San Diego State University from 1947 to 1976. The interview is a part of the San Diego State University Oral History Project of the San Diego State University Archives and is being recorded at Professor Dirks' home on Mount Helix. And we're recording? Yes, we are. You mentioned to me that you grew up here in San Diego. Were you born here in San Diego?
My parents brought me from Wisconsin when I was 7, and we lived in Los Angeles for about a year and a half, then moved to San Diego and been there ever since
1923, came to San Diego.
Right.
Mm-hmm. When you were 7. Mm-hmm. So all the dudes.
I was 9 at that
time. Oh, okay, all right.
Yeah.
So when were you born then? What month?
I was born in March 13, 1914.
Mm-hmm. So you primarily, well, then the schools that you attended were down here in San Diego.
Right, including San Diego State.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Tell me about the elementary school, junior high school and high school you went to.
We lived on what is now the end of Wabash Freeway. It was a wild canyon. And we had a 1-acre ranch. There was no house within 2 blocks. And then only 1 or 2. And we had chickens and raised taro vegetable garden and so forth. And I used to hunt in the canyon for rabbits and quail in season. And I had a lot of fun as a boy. I don't think any boy ever had more fun than I did. We organized groups of Frank Losey was one of my boyhood pals who wrote the fight song for the college.
Oh, was
and
that?
We built boats and model airplanes together and sailed them in ponds in the wintertime in the local canyon in the Mission Valley in the summer were dredger pools. We had our own regattas with 2-foot schooners, and they were really nice boats.
Hmm.
Later, I won the best construction and finally the fastest 3-foot boat in that, Union Model Yacht Regatta, which was long ago. I don't know if they still do it or not.
I don't know, but I remember my family used to
junior
make
high school
model
age
yachts
buoyants.
And uh-huh. sail them on that yacht.
Yeah.
The model boat basin down near Mission Valley.
That wasn't the one at Mission Beach was not existent at that time. It's fairly new creation compared to those dates
mm-hmm.
I've given you.
Mm-hmm.
But there were dredger ponds in Mission Valley that were nice.
Tell me what dredger ponds are. I don't even know.
where sand companies scoop up sand for commercial purposes and makes it sometimes very large and nice pond, because the water table in those days was higher than it is now. So that if you dug a hole in the river bottom, it filled with water.
I see.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, Mission Valley at that time was still a 2-lane road. There was
right,
nothing
was
down
dirt.
There except
it was dirt
farmland.
Road.
It was dirt.
It was dirt
then.
Road. It was never paved. When I was a boy, it was all dirt.
What do you remember any of the farms that were down there?
Well,
you ever make
Japanese
friends?
Had truck gardens clear from one end to the other, vegetable production primarily. And they were, of course, devastated during the flood, which was about in 1923 or 4, which took the water. See, in those days they didn't have San Vicente, nor El Capitan, nor Murray was in, but no other dams, so that when they had real heavy rain, it just ran bank to bank.
Mm-hmm.
And it took out all the truck gardens and their little houses and everything went out to sea. And I was up on the hill watching it. It was pretty frightening.
That was. Well, it was good. That's the way. It was good for the soil. That's the way things are replenished, right?
Well, I guess so.
It washes a lot of other things away, too.
They came back after the flood. Then, of course, property value gradually increased to such an extent they couldn't afford to keep it for vegetable growing.
Did the Japanese truck farmers, did they own the land or did they lease it from
I'm not sure about that. I think they leased it.
Well, that's probably why they couldn't afford to stay.
Of course, some of them, when World War II came along, jumping ahead a little bit, they were interned.
Yes.
And the man, the Japanese who owns a big nursery down by USD, his family were interned.
Asakawa.
Mm-hmm.
Asawaka. You know? Asakawa. Yes,
yeah.
I know him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's too bad, in a way, we had to do that. It's not trusting people.
I know.
Because we had Japanese citizens that fought with us, but they were U.S. citizens, and some of these people, I don't know what their status was, really.
Well, I don't know that much about it, but I have heard that some reasoning behind interning them was to protect them as well. Now, I don't know how reasonable that was.
Yeah.
Protect them from violence from people who, you know, would group them all together. Well, tell me more about growing up out here. Say, tell me what the environment was in the San Diego State area.
Yeah, well,
a kid.
San Diego State was way out in the sticks that day. The University Avenue was the way to get there, and it was very, very narrow, paved road, two lanes, I think. And we used to ride out to La Mesa. There was a lake in La Mesa with a little country club, and swimming in the lake. It was just sort of mud around the edges, but everybody swam in it. And that was considered quite a trip.
Yeah.
From East San Diego to La Mesa.
La Mesa. Well, even East San Diego, though, was out in the sticks.
Pardon me?
Well, even East San Diego was out in the sticks that
time. Yes, it was. It was. Where we lived was in the sticks, or coyotes and bobcats that stole our chickens. Well, I mentioned to you San Diego State College campus was being considered in San Diego, then they had three sites. One was Pacific Beach on a slope facing Mission Bay. One was Balboa Park, and the other one was here in what was called Redland Gardens. Mm-hmm. And when it was given to Redland Gardens, people were very upset because they said, well, it's way out in the boondocks, way out in the sticks. Why on earth did they ever decide to build a college there? I remember I used to hunt out there with shotgun, and it was just sagebrush about this high, and a little dirt road went in, and they put a flagpole up. I guess I told you that.
Yeah, but I'd like to hear.
I climbed the flagpole and thought, someday I might go to this college. I really did. That's no fake.
And you did.
And there were rattlesnakes and a lot of wild things around there. One little house, I think, a little white house was visible.
Mm-hmm.
From the side.
Do you think that growing up out in East San Diego, when such an open, pristine, beautiful area, had any influence on you going into sculpture or art?
That's a good question. I think what caused me to go into art was that I started making things with crude tools when I was very young, and I just sort of had a natural fiddling, building models of boats and airplanes. They were really nice models we made. You couldn't buy them and put them together like kids can do today. You had to build everything from scratch.
Do you have any left?
No, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I've got a boat I built in junior high school, but it's kind of hard to get down. It's up in the studio. It's a 3-foot sloop.
Wow.
And that's the one that won the prize.
It's almost big enough to sail in.
3 feet, that's right. It was a very pretty boat in its day, and still is. Anyway, the art thing came, I think, as a result of those early creative things that we did. We made model submarines that worked and all kinds of... my father was very helpful, and he helped me build a two-cylinder steam-powered hydroplane, which is very fast, well, a 3-foot boat.
Mm-hmm.
So my son became a naval architect because of my interest in boats.
I'll have to ask you more about your boating interests
yeah.
a little bit later.
Yes.
But that's very that's very interesting.
Uh-huh.
Growing up then in this open area, you had more of a chance to do things like that, whereas if you had grown up in an inner city area, you wouldn't have been able to.
We made little cities with lead cars. In those days, you used lead cars. And we made our own cars, too, which are bigger, with roller skates for wheels. But we learned to pave the roads and make little buildings and trees. And so we had a whole little town with bakeries and fire engines and stuff like that. But we had a lot of fun. And in the canyon, there was a beautiful cliff with sort of sandstone. We made roads, mountain roads, carved all around. We'd run these cars around on those.
That's that fun was, for
yeah.
kids.
What, as I say, we were never well-to-do at all. In fact, we had just enough to be very comfortable, but no more. I don't think our family ever had a bank account.
What did your father do? Was the ranch his business?
He was a painting contractor. Although he'd done a lot of things in Wisconsin, he could have been an extremely wealthy man, but it turned out he and two other men invested in a church furniture company, and they manufactured pulpits, and they had a spindle carving machine that made the profits that went around. In fact, St. Paul's in San Diego had one of their products, and their company was going just 100%, and the treasurer confiscated the money. He went to Paris and gambled it away, so the story went, and took cyanide potassium. But made a funny story. It would make some kind of a fiction novel real, but it's supposed to be real. People said they had seen him in Paris way back then.
It really happened.
They wouldn't let anyone see the body, so they thought maybe it was a fake. But they didn't borrowed so much money they couldn't borrow anymore, so they had to go bankrupt. But my father was an amazing man. He could do anything. He was extremely skilled in it. Anything you could ask.
It's nice to have a father like that.
Yeah.
And your mother, was she equally
My mother was Irish, Scotch-Irish, red-haired lady who was quite witty. And when she was around a lot of people, she made fun. Always made people laugh in a nice way. Well, she was a very good mother, in my opinion, because she just let me go. She didn't force me to do anything. But that was with some kids that would have been terrible. But it worked with me.
Uh-huh. You had enough self-direction to be able to do things anyway. Did you have brothers and sisters?
I had a sister.
Older than you?
Yeah, 6 years older.
Mm. She, almost like you're an only child.
She died quite a few years ago.
Is that right? That's unfortunate. Well, but your mother gave you plenty of free rein to do whatever you wanted, but of course you did have to, you had to attend class.
Oh, sure.
Where did you go to school?
Yeah, she gave me chores and looked after me, but she did understand the freedom kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
We had one of the sheds that the chickens were housed in as we cut the flock down from 450 to many less, and then we used one of the sheds for a workshop. That's where we made all the boats and stuff.
Hmm. That's fascinating. The chicken shed, this is kind of off the subject here.
Yeah.
We're kind of wandering away from San Diego State.
Yeah, we sure have.
But I wanted to ask you, your family evidently made a little extra money by raising the chickens and the eggs or whatever.
Yeah, sold the eggs.
Did you ever know of Dr. Harry Wegeforth and his involvement in the...
I knew him pretty well.
Did you?
Mm-hmm.
I've heard that he was supposed to have been credited for starting such a great poultry industry in San Diego County. Is that right? Yeah, have you ever heard of that?
Is this the one that started the zoo?
Yes,
I'm sorry, the one I was thinking of was Wedgwood, who was a ceramist. Yes, I knew Wegeforth. I knew his son better than I did.
Milton, you know, Ray IV, who was also a sailor. That's maybe
yeah,
why you know him.
Yeah, I do. Yeah. Uh-huh. Right. Yeah.
Okay. Well, I won't stay on that subject too much longer here. Well, okay. Now, what school did you attend out here at
I attended Edison High, Junior High. I mean, Edison Elementary, Woodrow Wilson Junior High, San Diego High 1 year, and then Hoover High was built. And so we were the senior class for 2 years at Hoover because they just took sophomore and junior with no seniors. So the junior class was senior for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went to San Diego State, of course.
Yeah, you received your bachelor's degree from San Diego State.
Right.
And what year was that?
1937.
37. And, of course, I was in art.
Mm-hmm. And I also got a special secondary credential for teaching in the lower grade levels. We were encouraged to do that in those days.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever use that secondary?
Yeah, I did. I taught at Hoover before the war, the same subjects.
Mm-hmm.
It was called crafts, but it was wood carving and ceramics.
Did you enjoy that?
Yeah, I did. I learned a lot. I learned a great deal, probably equally as much as I did going to college. But I knew I didn't want to teach high school any longer. So when the war came along, I resigned with tenure and went to work for Convair in their education department. And then after a year, I went into the Navy as an ensign.
But when did you start teaching then?
I think
the high school. And how old were you? You were almost of high school age yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, I started teaching half-time in 1938.
All right. So you were just about the same age as the students
yeah,
that were teaching.
Right.
Did you find that kind of odd? Or did they find it difficult to deal with?
Well, I didn't have any problem, particularly. There, the principal was very strict about it. He wouldn't even let a teacher dance with a woman student or vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but there was a little bit of interest on the part of the girls in young male faculty.
I hadn't thought about that. I just thought maybe it would be difficult to exert your authority over the students when they say, but he's just like us.
Well, I was big and strong and in a much better condition than now.
Yeah.
And I had a little problem, but it was never anything serious.
About your going to school at San Diego State to get your bachelor's degree, which instructors did you have? I mean, was it an excellent program when you were going to school there then?
Well, my father was a great athletic booster. He loved to have me participate in sports. So I was a fast runner, and I was San Diego Hoover's best sprinter in 100 and 220. And then at State, I was the same for, except in my senior year when I quit. And I played football, and being speedy like that, being the fastest runner on the team, didn't give you the prestige that does today. Now they realize that speed is everything. And the pros get salaries depending on how fast they do the 40, and to some degree if they can catch a ball and stuff. So I did, I liked the football and track, but I saw that because it was sort of the end of the Depression, you see, there weren't many teaching jobs. And at that time, I was not interested. I didn't think of teaching at college level. And high school teaching, if you wanted a job as a coach in high school, you had to be almost a 4-year letterman. And I only did two sports. And also, I was doing much better work in art as a minor than I did in physical education. I was getting all A's in art, and I wasn't too interested in the PE program, really. So that Mr. Jackson, you probably will interview, who was chairman for 37 years at
State. Have to ask you about him.
He hired me. In those days, the chairman did it, and with recommendation by approval of the president. And he... Well, before that time, when I was still a student, he said, "Dirk Dix, he's a Texan, I can assure you that you can get a job much better in art than you can in coaching." And I knew what a job a coach had. It's a terrible life where you can't win them all, and then you're very sad. And so I switched majors. So I had to go an extra semester because I had a lot more units than I needed in the wrong subjects. Mm-hmm. And then in my last semester, I became the assistant supervisor under the NYA program, which paid a little money for to Patty Patterson, was then the professor, one of the top professors in the USA in child education, art education, I should say. She was about number two ranked nationally, an authority on children's art. And she asked me, she said, "I'm so busy in my classes over here with college students, if you would mind supervising the Campus Lab School's art, and I'll give you the title of assistant supervisor."
Oh, nice.
So in my senior year, I think just the last semester, I was did that. That was very interesting because I had experience working with all levels of children, which is what they wanted you to do in those days, so you'd have complete understanding of development of the child along the way. So I even taught first grade a couple of times.
You did, huh?
Yeah, and the regular supervisory teacher sat in the back and smiled all the time. I knew I was supposed to use little tiny words, but it was hard, you know, to communicate.
But that must have helped you
future
teaching.
It did.
It really opens up your mind to what
we made kites, and by tying strings and things, we flew them. Everybody got one up in the air.
Right.
But I had a couple of assistants. There were some lower echelon art majors that were going to be doing art teaching, and they came over there and worked as sort of TAs, teaching aides.
Mm-hmm.
So the three of us got all these kites together, and we flew them. The kids had a big time.
What part of campus was that on?
San Diego State.
What section? That was near the old
Campus Lab.
Campus
School
Lab
is the building immediately north.
The low building with a red tile.
Immediately north of Student Union.
Uh-huh.
That,
the NYA program, National Youth Association.
Mm-hmm.
Is that what that is?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. It paid peanuts, but you know, something like $18 a month. It was a lot more money then. Maybe it was more than that.
So you did have quite a bit of activity and changes of plans and so forth when you were getting your undergraduate
degree. Well, I did practice teaching with Marguerite Breidegaard, who was the supervisory teacher at the Campus Lab School. They thought that was a good experience. And the other practice teaching was high school level.
Could you tell me about Marguerite Breidegaard while you're talking?
Well, I know her quite well. She's faded away. We can't get her to find out anything about her lately. But we used to go out to dinner together and stuff like that, Ruth and I.
What was her specialty?
Mathematics. She's a brilliant woman. She's a PhD in mathematics and wrote a textbook for elementary use, I think. It's a very good one.
Do you know when she came to State?
Mm. I could look it up. I got a book in
there. Yeah. I can find it in the catalog.
Yeah,
I was just
wondering
if you knew offhand.
But she's an old-timer.
Mm-hmm.
Way ahead of me.
Mm-hmm.
She was also a good friend of Ilse Rocco, who was in those days known as Ilse Hammond, who came to teach in the art department. And they roomed together, those two ladies, until they both got married.
Ilse Rocco was, what was her maiden name?
Hammond,
H-A-M-M-A-N?
Uh-huh. And Marguerite, I don't know Marguerite's last name, but it was Breidegaard is the architect she married.
Yeah. But I use the Breidegaard room frequently in the library for conducting interviews,
yeah.
And my office is too noisy.
Uh-huh.
But I've never known who it was named after.
Yeah.
And Ilse Rocco, of course, I know of her.
You know about the foundation and that is established for our rock mm-hmm. and it's mm-hmm. very successful.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the funds have been used by the art faculty so that the interior design facilities at San Diego State are greatly enhanced by the additional funds that this, on top of what the state gave.
It's an endowment.
So that I don't think any school on the West Coast has a better interior design department facility-wise. They've just got it.
Is that right?
Beautiful, yeah.
I didn't know that.
We'll look at it sometime.
I never get down there like I should. I should visit more frequently. Okay, now that we've gone off on that extra little leg, let's go back to your work, your work history. You moved on. After you got your degree at State, then you went on to Convair?
Let's see now. After the war, I went to Convair in the education department and was being trained to become a flight and service engineer on B-24s. And I didn't particularly like the way things were going. The people that you associated with were dishonest and take advantage of.
Hmm.
Like I wrote all the tests to train the Army crewmen. I wrote a lot of the tests. And then there are some people who would tell the boss they did it. You know, that kind of thing.
Oh.
One of the head men, the man in charge, was FBI caught him for stealing. He had a whole garage full of tools he took. And also the flight and service representative had a very dangerous job. Their fatalities were something like 30%, because you had to go to anywhere in the world where they were flying B-24s and find out what was wrong with the plane that mm-hmm. that would have bugs in it, and then go up to prove it was all right. But they didn't they weren't killed by that type of thing so much as they were the fact that they had to fly in almost any kind of airplane all over the world at any time of the year. Now, one of my friends was killed going to Alaska, who was one of the guys in this program. He just went, you know, they had to fly in inclement weather, and the plane went down. So when the Navy advertised and said they would give a bachelor's degree to persons that had they would give a rank of ensign or higher to anyone who had a bachelor's degree in art. And that was the Renshaw program, psychology. Professor Renshaw at Ohio State University sold the Navy on the idea that people who studied art could see better than those than other people.
I was going to ask you, why art? Uh-huh. But that's why.
Yeah, uh-huh. And he invented the system of flash testing for identification. So actually what I went into was aircraft and ship identification. And there were great tragedies where we shot down our own planes and shot at our own ships and things because they couldn't tell one from the other. So this program was trying to correct that. So I went to Ohio State University for indoctrination, and then they sent me to Aero Gunnery School because on my program I said that I was had done a lot of upland game shooting. My grandfather was a champion trap shooter, and my father, he used to hunt and take me. That's how I learned how to hunt.
Mm-hmm.
And so here I was in the Aero Gunnery, and then when I reported, I finished third in the class, and the Navy called the top five in and said our policy is to send you where you'd like to go if you can. So I said, I'd like, for the time being, eventually I'd like to go out on a carrier, but I'd like duty in the United States and Naval Air Station, so they sent me to Quonset Point, Rhode Island. When I got there, they said, we don't need any recognition officers, but we sure as hell need a gunnery officer. So I became, that's all I did in the war, was later I became designated as sighting officer, which... And they would, when I went to Alameda as a second tour of duty, the Admiral's office would call and say, we need a refresher course for squadron so-and-so at Santa Rosa or
as far
Monterey.
As identification? Or as
no,
far
no,
as
this
gunnery.
Was gunnery.
This is gunnery.
So they would send a car and pick me up, and then the lieutenant would fly me in a plane to Santa Rosa, and I'd give my spiel, and then he'd say, "What time do you want me to pick you up?"
Oh, wow.
It was pretty neat.
Well, were you ever disappointed that you didn't go see the world and try out your skills on aircraft identification?
Oh, sort of, yes, I would, because I was good at it. But I went to the commanding officer when at Quonset and said that the war, I've been here 18 months, and I've observed that's about as long as anybody stays. I expect orders. And I'd like to volunteer for one of the new carriers. And he said, "I wouldn't do it.